Welcome to another episode of the Data Revolution podcast. This is where we explore the intersection of society, culture, data, and technology. This podcast offers insights into the evolving role of data, AI, privacy, and cybersecurity in shaping our world. I'm your host, Kate Carruthers, and this time I'll be talking about data protection and how we need to get to work together with colleagues to ensure that data protection can happen effectively. This is because data protection is a team sport and no one person or no single person business unit can do it all on their own. In recent times, I've started to use the term data protection as an umbrella term for the things that we need to manage across an organization. And this includes things like cybersecurity, information security, data and information governance, and privacy. And today, I also want to run through the threat landscape so we can see why this is such a big focus area. Or should be such a big focus area for every business. Every organization nowadays holds huge amounts of personal information for staff and customers. They hold things like tax file numbers or social security numbers, bank accounts, and other private details. And increasingly, every organization holds large amounts of customer and staff interaction data. And this is all just growing exponentially. For example, a number of data points that we can capture in relation to a customer interaction and the AI-based analysis that we can do on that data increases every single day. And we have an obligation to secure this data. And we also have an obligation to maintain the privacy of this data, which means that cybersecurity, information security, data governance, and enterprise risk management, along with privacy, should be a key focus. And as you might all know by now, I believe that data governance is a key foundation for cyber and information security. And for effective data protection. We need to master all of these, each one of them. Cybersecurity, information security, data and information governance, and privacy, along with all their essential risk management functions. And these all need to be supported by sound policies and procedures. We need to make it easy for people to do the right thing. This is particularly important because I've found in every single instance that convenience trumps privacy and cybersecurity in practice every single time. Allow me a slight reminiscence. My organization got hacked back in 2012, way before it was cool. We got hacked in the same way that the Australian National University did only a few years ago. And since then, we've been beefing up our defenses because it was a real wake-up call for us. We weren't able to attribute that attack, but we had thought that it might be a state actor. And we had been so very open to that attack. So we had to go back to first principles and focus our cybersecurity and information security. We appointed our first chief information security officer arising from that breach and have continued improving ever since. I just want to make one slight digression to talk about the difference between cybersecurity and information security, because they're not the same thing, and I want to make people aware of what they are. Cybersecurity refers to the ability to defend or protect the use of cyberspace from cyber attacks, so it's protection from external threats. That's the definition from NIST, also known as the US National Institute of Standards and Technology. Whereas the information security refers to the maintenance of confidentiality, integrity, and availability, or CIA, as we call it in the biz. That too is a NIST definition, and I'm quite fond of NIST, so you'll hear it fairly often. NIST says that information security is, quote, the protection of information and information systems from unauthorized access, use, disclosure, disruption, modification, or destruction in order to provide confidentiality, integrity, and availability, unquote. So both cyber and information security seek to reduce the attack surface. And this is another way of saying the different vulnerability areas that we have. We commonly define the attack surface between different realms. So we talk about the digital, the physical, and social engineering attack surface. The big part of understanding our digital attack surface is understanding our assets, and these are largely data assets. We often break these into known assets, unknown assets, and rogue assets. And a system's inventory is the starting place for understanding what data assets you have, and it's harder than you think it might be to do this. We've had several tries, we're still trying, but we keep finding more stuff. And now that people can just get out through an internet connection and use their corporate credit card to acquire software as a service, a lot of assets are outside of our own organizational control. So there's an increased amount of third-party risk. The other things that we need to look at in addition to our digital attack surface is our physical attack surface and social engineering attack surface. Now, the physical attack surface is largely the province of the information technology folks. So IT and all the servers and other infrastructure that they maintain. While the social engineering attack surface is things like phishing or somebody impersonating you to the help desk and obtaining a credential. Social engineering. That's an increasingly large threat for us now. Now, things that we used to think that were quite solid, like voice prints or biometrics, are now quite vulnerable with the rise of digital fakes and digital deepfakes. Now, for example, they only need a couple seconds of your voice to create a deepfake of you and to be able to then spoof your voice so that they can do a social engineering attack. The thing that we often find with this is that there is a constant arms race. We get better, the bad folks get better, we get better, the bad folks get better. It is a constant arms race, and that's the big challenge with all of this. And when looking at the threat landscape, there's a lot of places you can get this, but I like the ENISA version of the threat landscape. Their proper name is the European Agency for Cybersecurity, and they put out a threat landscape every year, and I find theirs to be really helpful. And just looking back at their 2020 threat intelligence landscape, they noted that the threat landscape mapped malware as the strongest number one cyber threat in the EU, with an increase in phishing, identity theft, ransomware, monetization, all holding their place as the cyber criminals' top motivation. And the COVID-19 environment fueled attacks on homes, governments, and critical infrastructure. That seems pretty prescient because that was precisely what happened that year. I recommend that you go and have a look at the ENISA threat landscape and I'll make sure that I link to it in the show notes. One of the problems that we've got now is that the perimeter has shifted. Back in the olden days, 5, 10, 20 years ago, you used to be able to lock yourself in behind your firewalls inside your organization. All of your servers were in your data center. They were totally under your control. And once we were locked in safely behind our firewalls, the bad guys couldn't get to us. But increasingly, we've seen the shift has been driven much faster by COVID. The perimeter is now wherever someone logs into your network. And the weakest link in our security always remains our people and their propensity to click things. Although even the bad actors have gotten smart now and have got malware that doesn't need anyone to click anything. Anyway, all of this means that we need to evolve our practices. You know, we can't hide behind our firewalls anymore. And it means that we need to up our data protection game. And data protection, as I've mentioned, is not just one thing. It includes all of the things. It's the practices with data and information governance, cyber and information security and privacy, but it's also a risk management function. And it means that we actually need to evolve our policies and procedures to provide sensible and practical guidance for people. We also need to improve our data management practices and build our security and privacy practices into it so that it's easy for them to comply. Over the past few years, a number of us have been talking about DevOps, development operations, and as a way of working. Increasingly now, we're talking about DevSecOps, so development security operations. And we're also talking about privacy by design. And now we have obligations to undertake privacy by design. And this leads us into the thing that you actually do need to start to shift, which is people and culture. And that's hard because culture is stronger than most things. There's a famous Peter Drucker quote that culture eats strategy for breakfast. I've always joked that strategy gets eaten for breakfast, lunch, and dinner by culture. Once I worked at an organization, I came back a decade later, and the culture was so strong. Even though they had spent millions of dollars on cultural change programs, they hadn't shifted anything. The culture I walked into was the same as the day I walked out 10 years before. So if we've got to change all of these practices, it means we actually need cultural change and we need an organizational commitment to it. But we also need to pay attention to our perimeter, because the perimeter is wherever our people are. We need to evolve our practices to make sure that we can monitor our perimeter no matter where people are logging in from. We need to actually understand our network and understand what normal traffic looks like. And the other thing that we need to do is to secure our endpoints. By our endpoints, I mean our devices. These are the things that we connect to our networks with, which includes mobile phones, tablets, laptops, even Internet of Things devices. Because whenever you're operating on a file using something like Office 365, for example, every time you're on a desktop or a laptop and you access a file, you're bringing a local copy down. That means that things like endpoint encryption becomes increasingly important. And then we also need to make sure that we're doing and that we've got a focus on application security. And this is a big part of the shift to DevSecOps. You might remember in an earlier episode that when I started the data governance program here at work, many people weren't really interested in it. And many people even said they didn't want or need any help. But I got these five questions from Mike Burgess, who's currently the Director of Security in charge of ASIO. Oh, sorry, the Director General of Security in charge of ASIO, the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation. And after we run through these questions, people would often end up sobbing on my shoulder asking for help. And these five simple questions really help to focus people on the reality of how their data is managed. And I think they're extremely valid even now, and they will help the discussion across all of the things that I've mentioned. The five questions are, and you're going to get sick of me rambling about these because I really do think they're quite profound. First of all, do you know the value of your data? Do you know who has access to your data? Do you know where your data is? Do you know who is protecting your data? And do you know how well your data is protected? They're the five questions, and these are the sort of fundamental questions that we need to be starting to think about. I like them because they put it in plain English. There's nothing technically complex about any of those questions. But they really help to focus your attention, because if you don't know the answer to one of those questions, you know you've got a problem. I think we need more simple things like this, because in our world, in the world of data protection, there is a lot of jargon and a lot of big words that normal people don't understand. And we need to make this understandable for normal people. One thing that cyber folks often talk about is defense in depth. This is the notion that a series of defensive mechanisms can be layered in order to protect valuable information and data. If one mechanism fails, then the other one can step in to stop an attack. And I always think that this is an important way that data governance can help, because it can help add layers of protection, in addition to all of the technical layers that the cybersecurity, information security people can bring to bear. And one of the most important things is that data governance can help us to identify data risk, can help us to locate sensitive data, and it can also enable us to ensure that sensitive data is stored and managed properly and appropriately. It can also help us to identify the users of sensitive data and ensure that they have good security and have consistent data access processes. And also, you know, ensure that they have things like endpoint encryption and multi-factor authentication and all of those protections that we use in the cyber and information security space to ensure safer access to sensitive data. And the other thing that's really important is identifying who's using it and actually finding out if they have a legitimate business purpose for accessing it. And also discovering where it is being stored, because a lot of times people are getting sensitive data and taking a copy and storing that locally in an unsafe manner. And that's a really big risk for an organization if you're not aware of that sort of thing. The data that's stored in a database or an application is usually looked after by IT, is pretty well understood in most places. But the data that's stored on file systems and other places, what we call unstructured data, is not very often well understood organizationally. It's very often not well protected. And often that data flows through the enterprise and we don't know where it goes. And this is where we need to get tools like data loss or data leakage prevention. And this is all needed so that we can actually help people to mitigate the risk to data. Many organizations use the three lines of defense model to manage their risk. This is a risk management discipline that looks at ownership, oversight, and assurance of the risk management function. The first line of defense is the functions that own and manage the risk, typically frontline personnel. The second line of defense are the ones that specialize in risk management and compliance and assurance. And then the third line of defense are the functions that provide independent assurance and internal audit. And one of the challenges we've got with the first line of defense, that a lot of this comes from business people who are being asked to take on management of a risk that they don't understand, a technology or a technical risk that they don't have a clear understanding of the implications of, especially when they accept risk. And increasingly, we're going to need to ensure that they actually have cyber information security, privacy and data and information governance running across all three lines of defense, because the risk landscape is getting too hard for normal people to understand, especially in the AI space. As it's emerging, we're seeing a whole lot of new and interesting risks. I think it's a really interesting area to keep an eye on, AI, but I would say that normal managers are going to increasingly find that they will not be able to properly assess and understand the risk that they're taking, especially in respect of AI. So the real question is, what can we do to protect our data? Here are 10 things that I think every organization needs to do. The first thing they need to do is understand which data assets need protection. It means that you need to have a data inventory, and you also need to have some kind of data classification standard, because you need to understand how you ascertain that a data asset is precious. The second thing that we need to have is encryption. We need to be able to work out what data is important and encrypt that. Sometimes in databases, it's really actually quite hard to encrypt the data. You think it's easy, but it's not, because you take a performance hit when you encrypt. So you might choose to encrypt, say, the overall instance that the database lives on, or you might choose to encrypt the database and take that performance hit. Or increasingly, we're going to start to think about not encrypting an entire database, because that's a bit of overkill and you take that performance hit. We're going to start encrypting individual fields. And that means that we're going to actually have to know what fields are important so that we can do that kind of work. Then the third thing is user awareness training. Now, I'm not a big fan of training being the answer to everything, but users are our weakest link, and they need to understand the risks that they're dealing with. And training is often the only way that we can make that happen. The fourth thing is really going back to your information lifecycle and ensuring that you're storing only that data which is necessary. Every time we're storing data, we need to ask ourselves if we store it, because if we don't, it just adds much risk to the organization. Do we actually need to store it? How long do we need to store it for? And how do we need to secure it while it is stored? Number five is a kind of a technical thing, which is closing any unnecessary open ports. Open ports are an external vulnerability, and if you leave them open, you open yourself up to unacceptable risk. Get your IT folks to go and see what ports are open and closed, and get them to close the ones they don't need. The sixth thing, and these are in no particular order, the sixth thing I think is multi-factor authentication. And multi-factor authentication, not the rubbish kind that uses SMS or email, but the kind that uses a proper authenticator. The bad guys keep escalating, we keep escalating, but multi-factor authentication reduces your attack surface as an organization quite considerably, and is probably the single most important thing you can do. And number 7 is again a very technical one, but review your network segmentation. If your network is designed so that people cannot traverse across it, that is a great protection. And it's probably worth looking at that together with privileged access management. And then the 8th thing, I think, is improving email security. You can implement things like a send policy framework, domain keys identified mail, and domain-based or message automation authentication reporting and conformance. This will really help to protect email. The acronyms are SPF, DKIM, and DMARK, if you like your acronyms. There are 3 things that you can really do that will improve your email security. And again, they're quite technical. Your IT folks need to be doing this. One thing that the business can do is ensure that they have regular access reviews for business. And this is particularly important when people stay at an organization for a long time, have a lot of jobs, and they tend to aggregate access as they go, especially if they never lose their old access. It's an important kind of thing to be picking up on, because if those people who've aggregated a lot of access get their access breached, get their credentials breached, then that's a real risk to the organization. And number 10 is a particular bugbear of mine, a proper patching schedule. A lot of organizations do patching projects where they patch, this is security patching, and then they don't patch for a couple of years. You need to be doing security patching as and when it comes due. One of the biggest data breaches in history have been because somebody didn't apply a patch to a known vulnerability. Getting your patching done, this is at the operating system level as well as the application level, is such an important practice. Get a schedule and make it part of your practice, because you will be much better for the organization if you do that. What I've learned so far is it's really important to methodically build up defensive layers. Just don't leave it to one layer. Have a multi-layered defense. Defense in depth is a real and sensible thing. The other thing is the power of incremental change. If you do one thing better every day, and we work about 220 days a year, then if we do that one thing better per day, that is 220 things that have been improved. Do not underestimate the power of incremental change. Times that by the number of people in your organization, that's an awful lot of incremental improvement. The other thing is that if we accept that data is an asset, then it needs to be managed, and it needs to be managed sensibly and pragmatically. But it needs to be managed with a security lens. And the other thing is that data security is a team effort, and it needs everybody to work collaboratively. There is no one single person in the organization, no one single business unit, who knows how to make sure that the data is protected. It's a team sport, and data protection is a journey, not a destination. I often say that data security is like painting the harbour bridge. Once you start, and then you finish, you've got to start painting again. It's an ongoing effort, and it's important. And that's why it's important to make it a team sport too, because otherwise you'll get very tired of it. That's all for now. Hope you'll join me again next time. Thank you very much for listening.